All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is June 30th, 2026. End of the quarter. Put a pin in that. We'll talk about that in a second. But first, our main story this morning. Story broke midday yesterday. Super Microcomputer. I just love talking about this company. They have been such fertile soil. And by fertile soil, I mean an absolutely wretched hive of scum and villainy. Because these people are such epic scumbags, they never stop supplying me with ample fodder to talk to you guys about. Yesterday, Supermicro's office in Taiwan was raided by authorities. And you might be saying, oh, Jack, we've heard this one before. Yes, I know. We've heard this one a lot because this company is always in the news because they're always breaking the freaking law. And yesterday was no different. So you may have this confused with other stories, so allow me to go into specifics. Yesterday, the actual office of Supermicrocomputer in Taiwan was raided, along with the homes of six individuals affiliated with the company, and along with the offices of three affiliated companies. This was by Taiwanese authorities because of suspected smuggling of restricted AI chips into China and falsification of documents associated with those exports. Now, again, you may have this confused with that story from back in May when Supermicro had three of their employees arrested in Taiwan for the same thing, falsification of documents. They were using hair dryers to peel the labels off of NVIDIA GPUs and Supermicro servers and then put them onto dummy equipment. That dummy equipment was then sold to data centers in Malaysia and Singapore, things I've been talking about for years on this channel. And then the actual high-end equipment was sent on to China. Again, something I have been talking about for freaking years, and yet the AI bros have always been saying, you have no proof, yep, other than videos of guys in China standing in front of giant boxes full of Supermicro servers saying, look at my NVIDIA GPUs that are illegal in America, other than guys getting arrested and offices getting raided. Yep, other than the mountain of proof, there's no proof at all. Yeah, so that happened yesterday and in May. And again, it also happened in March. In March of this year, three employees were indicted here in the United States by the Department of Justice, again, for the same thing. This company has made billions of dollars illegally selling Supermicro servers, which are loaded with restricted NVIDIA GPUs to China through third-party countries, something everybody could see happening. Oh, but my AI stocks, but my stock market bubble. So everybody is just pretending like it's not happening. And keep in mind, guys, this stuff is supposedly being used for military applications by our biggest geopolitical rival, which means this equipment could conceivably be used one day to kill Americans. And everybody was just okay with it because their stocks were going up. And I love to talk about this company, but at the same time, God, I'm trying to have a little bit of faith in humanity here, but some of these people are just freaking awful. Now, also keep in mind that all of these chip smuggling arrests and probes and raids in the office and affiliated companies, this is after their accounting scandal that they had in 2024, which never went away. They were at risk of getting delisted because their auditor up and quit after that Hindenburg research report, which was fantastically done, by the way. Then they hired BDO. BDO came in and rubber stamped their reports with a big asterisk next to it and said, basically, we're approving this document, but this company still has huge holes in internal controls and weaknesses in compliance that they need to fix. Somehow that was good enough for the NASDAQ to help them avoid getting delisted, even though they fixed nothing. And to this day, all of their financial documents have that little asterisk that basically says, you can't trust a word this company says, but we're signing off on their books anyway. That was the accounting scandal in 2024 and 2025. Not to be confused with the accounting scandal in 2020, the last time they got delisted by the NASDAQ. And then after that accounting scandal, the guy named Wally Law, one of the company's co-founders who was the CFO at the time, he had to resign in disgrace over those accounting frauds. After they got relisted, they hired Wally Law back. And then, of course, back in March, Wally Law had to resign again because he was one of the three people who was indicted by the Department of Justice for violating export controls. And remember back in March, the company said, oh, we're cooperating with authorities and the company is not the target of this investigation. Only those three people. right? Oh, it's a shame a few bad apples have to ruin the whole bunch, right? Like that comment. No, this wasn't three rogue actors. This company is a criminal enterprise. It is so painfully obvious. And yet these AI bros, the next time this company pushes out a press release about some non-binding resolution to do something, hopefully maybe one day, these guys will buy the stock. It amazes me every time. But yeah, I would not, with my worst, with my worst enemy's money, I would not buy this company. Now, as all this is going on, we have got the end of the quarter. And it was a heck of a quarter. The second quarter, arguably one of the best quarters for stocks, tech stocks in particularly, in history. And yet after, on top of all that, June itself was one of the worst months for the Mag 7 in history. The Mag 7 collectively lost $2.3 trillion in June, even though they're up for the quarter. Chief among them was Microsoft, which is down almost 20% since once again increasing their CapEx when everybody knows they're not making any money off of any of this stuff. They're just round-tripping big revenue gains, but they're not actually making any profits. Their free cash flow has gone up in smoke. CNBC has an article about this where they bought in. Who better to talk about why stocks are down than two of the biggest joke perma bulls in history, in my opinion, Dan Ives and Tom Lee, who are saying the reason they're down is because of jitters, because, the next big thing is yet to be fully validated. Yeah, you think? Speaking of the next big thing, Ford is rehiring 350 graybeards. This was the story that came out yesterday. All right, why is Ford hiring graybeards? And first of all, who are these graybeards? Are these thousands of Northerners who've come to die for the Dragon Queen? No. They're rehiring people that had retired or people that they had let go, fired, laid off, or whatever, because they tried to replace them with AI. And Ford said, don't worry, the chatbot is going to do our quality control from now on. And, you know, that sounds like a great idea, technology with a 20% hallucination rate. Let's put that in charge of quality control. And then lo and behold, Ford has a whole bunch of recalls. Shocking, I know. So what's the answer? Ford rehires all the people they let go to fix the AI. Nobody saw that coming. I mean, how many times have I said on this channel, at some point, all of these companies are going to have to rehire all these people they're letting go because some FUMU executive in a boardroom said a thing about AI and they just decided, let's fire thousands of people who know what they're doing and replace them with this chatbot that always makes mistakes. Again, nobody ever could have predicted this might happen, right? Yeah, lo and behold, since they rehired those graybeards, by the way, quality control has improved. We've got the Japanese yen is at 162 to the dollar now. That is a high, and by a high, I mean the yen is at a 40-year low. We're expecting yen intervention where the Japanese Finance Ministry comes in and basically interferes in Forex markets to try to prop up their own currency any day now. But it's interesting that we're at 162. It would appear that the Japanese have moved their red line, which was historically at 160. They seem to have moved it in the wake of Kevin Warsh being appointed at the Federal Reserve and coming out like a hawk at his last meeting. We've got the UK is boosting defense spending to as high as 3.5% GDP. That's according to Keir Starmer this morning, who's not afraid to talk about it now that he has no political future. China is lifting some of its fuel export curbs. Now, this is interesting. We've got a couple of energy headlines this morning. China has really taken the brunt of this supply disruption by reducing their imports and burning down their oil reserves. They also restricted a lot of exports of refined fuels. China now anticipates a return to normal in the strait or something resembling normal in the strait. So they are proactively lifting some of those export curbs. Now, meanwhile, you've got India is planning to add to their strategic fuel reserves. Now, both of these stories here, China is lifting some export curb and India with their strategic fuel reserves increasing. Both of those stories are examples of why energy prices may not drop too much lower from here, because the Chinese are not going to keep burning down their reserves. As this Iranian oil makes it back into the market, the Chinese are going to scoop that right back up and stop burning their reserves down. So it's not like we're going to flip instantly to an oversupplied market. Likewise, countries like India, like Japan, have both announced plans to increase their strategic fuel reserves. That is going to be a lot of buying pressure that once things in the strait get back to whatever normal is going to be from now on, you're going to have some buying pressure from these countries that are highly vulnerable to supply disruptions trying to increase their own reserves. Meanwhile, we've got Russia is now actively trying to import gasoline Oh, how the mighty have fallen. I mean, remember, Russia was once referred to as basically a country masquerading, or a gas station masquerading as a country. And now they have to import their gas because the Ukrainians have blown up all their refineries, or so many of their refineries, that one of the most energy rich countries in the world can't supply its own domestic needs. You've got the U.S. maybe banning Chinese inverters. That's an interesting story as well. Maybe a little bit of tinfoil hat involvement there. Worried about Chinese basically backdooring the U.S. power grid. Yikes. And last but not least, private credit and buy now, pay later. A match made in heaven. We've got this article in Bloomberg we got to talk about here. And when I say a match made in heaven, that is if your idea of heaven is, cranking out toxic debt and dumping it into people's pensions and 401ks in order to collect fees. If that's what heaven looks like to you, then yeah, private credit and buy now, pay later are a match made in heaven. In particular, forward flow agreements is what we're going to be talking about. Stick around to the end of the show for that. But in the meantime, we've got to shrink my big melon of a head because, we've got a lot to talk about. So hit that like button, hit that subscribe button for the algorithm, and let's see what's going on in the world of finance this morning. Right now, the S&P 500 is down about 2.5 points, going a whole bunch of nowhere in stocks this morning. The Dow is off by 19 points, 0.04% in the red, and the NASDAQ is down 26 points, 0.09%. So all three indexes are red for the end of the month, but by a small amount. Also, guys, keep in mind, it is the end of the quarter today, so you may have some volatility over the next few days, a lot of portfolio rebalancing. We had a big red June, but we had a big green quarter. Now that it's the end of the month, we're heading into the next quarter. You could see some people selling stocks in order to reposition. I don't know. End of the month, end of the quarter tends to be pretty volatile. Meanwhile, the DXY is higher by 16 basis points, 101.29. Looking over at the bond market, we've got the 30-year yield is higher by almost 2 basis points at 4.877. The 10-year yield is at 4.391. That's higher by about 1.5. The 2-year yield is at 4.125%, also higher by 1.5%. And the 1-month treasury is at 3.691, higher by 0.5% this morning. Not a lot of movement happening in bonds. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got metals finally catching a bid this morning, $4,031 for spot gold. That's higher by $14 or 0.36%. Spot silver is higher by a dollar or 1.75% at $59.28. I like the shiny. Copper is up by 1.5%. Platinum lower by 0.75%. And palladium is down by about 0.2% this morning. Crude oil higher by about 34 cents. $71.10 a barrel for August WTI futures. That's a little bit higher this morning, but things in the Middle East have been, I guess, what passes for quiet these days over the last couple of days. Looking over at Bitcoin, we are sharply lower this morning, $58,468. That's lower by $1,600. Bitcoin appears to be in the process of breaking down below this recent support level here. And keep in mind, we had a lot of news about Bitcoin yesterday with MicroStrategy and their Bitcoin monetization plan, which is just fancy long speak for selling Bitcoin in order to pay their debt service and dividend costs. So Bitcoin finally reacting to that. But let's talk about the main story this morning. Taiwan raids Supermicro in widening China chip smuggling probe. Notice to say it's widening. It's getting bigger. Jensen, You feel them closing in, Jensen? I mean, you've been playing stupid, saying, oh, we insist all our customers have to follow the law, but we have no way of knowing where our product is going. I'm not so sure that's going to fly forever. Taiwan government agencies raided the office of Supermicro Computer and several of its local affiliates, deepening an investigation into the alleged smuggling of NVIDIA chips into China using the company's servers. Local investigators raided the residences of 6 people and the sites of 3 affiliated companies on Monday as part of an ongoing probe into the allegedly illegal export of Supermicro servers, Taiwan's Keelung District Prosecutor's Office said in a statement. While the agency did not provide the names of those searched, Supermicro's Taiwan office was among them, a person familiar with the situation said, asking not to be identified because the information isn't public. Shares of Supermicro, which said it's cooperating with authorities, fell 8% in U.S. trading. The raid marks an expansion of Taiwan's first public crackdown on AI chip diversion after years of pressure from Washington to take more active role in curtailing China's access to technology. The U.S. has for years restricted exports of advanced components such as NVIDIA AI chips to China over concerns that the hardware, the vast majority of which is produced in Taiwan, could benefit Beijing's military efforts. Supermicro said in a statement it's working closely with Taiwanese authorities. Supermicro is committed to protecting our advanced technologies and intellectual property, the firm said. Supermicro products continued to be targeted in these manners, and we continue to cooperate with law enforcement and government officials in Taiwan and other jurisdictions in which we operate to ensure our technology is distributed as lawfully as intended. Yes, Supermicro is working very closely with authorities. We're just as shocked as you are to find out that our freaking co-founder was using a hairdryer to peel the labels off of NVIDIA GPUs to smuggle them into China's. Oh, yeah, well, it's very important, compliance and all that other bullshit that we just said. Prosecutors also raided the offices of data center operator Chief Telecom Inc. and Supermicro distributor Albatron Technology as part of the probe. Albatron said in an exchange filing that it was searched by local investigators earlier on Monday without providing details about why it was targeted. Its shares plunged 10% in Taipei, though the company said there was no financial or operational impact. On Tuesday, Chief Telecom said it was working with prosecutors on the case, adding that operations remain normal. Its stock slid more than 2%. By the way, this whole no impact on our financials or our operations, that is bunk, because if a large portion of your earnings have been coming from illegal activities and then the people doing those illegal activities get busted, presumably those illegal activities cease, well, then your earnings are about to go down in that scenario because you don't have your legal business anymore. Something to try explaining that to the Supermicro bros, I don't know. But right now, SMCI, it fell 8.1% yesterday. I told you, these guys will buy anything. They're buying it this morning, up 1.46%, recovering some of those losses. And keep in mind, this stock was as high as $52 just a few weeks ago. And that's after it was trading in the teens in April or in March, after their co-founder was indicted. Again, when your co-founder gets indicted for what's essentially tantamount to treason and international espionage, that's not a freaking buy signal, guys. Come on. Supermicro bros. I tell you again, accounting scandal after accounting scandal, illegal chip smuggling. This is dead money. This thing is a goose egg in the long run. This company is eventually going to be sold off for parts. They're going to have to change their name in disgrace. Charles Lang, the creepy CEO of this company, he will be in handcuffs one day. The question I have is, will this spread to NVIDIA and Jensen? Is NVIDIA really unaware that potentially tens of billions of dollars of their product was being illegally sold to China? Could they really be that stupid? It's up to you. Meanwhile, Mag7 value shrinks by $2.3 trillion amid AI spending jitters, but investors are still backing chip makers. And by chip makers, they mean memory chip makers. Around $2.3 trillion has been wiped off the value of Mag7 this month as the tech giant's huge infrastructure spending is increasingly scrutinized by investors who see stronger returns in other parts of the markets, or maybe any returns in other parts of the markets, because Mag7 spending all this CapEx on AI has yet to yield one penny of profit for any of them outside of NVIDIA, that is. Mag7 comprises Microsoft, NVIDIA, Alphabet, Apple, Meta, Tesla, and Amazon. The CNBC Mag7 index has fallen 10% so far in June. These companies, in particular Amazon, Microsoft, Alphabet, and Meta, are collectively spending hundreds of billions of dollars buying chips and building data centers to power their AI services. Some of this investment is being fueled by debt. Actually, a lot of it is now being fueled by debt, off-balance sheet debt, paging Enron. Investors are waiting to see a return on those investments, with all eyes on the second quarter earnings season, which kicks off next month. And remember, any of this increase in earnings, remember in particular Google's earnings report from last quarter, nearly half of their earnings per share was paper gains they recorded in OpenAI just by marking up their value of the stake in OpenAI. These AI products themselves are not making any money. They're just investing back and forth with each other in the same companies at progressively higher valuations, booking profits for themselves along the way. We are going through another gut check few weeks ahead for the tech trade as tech investors await a very important 2Q earnings season in July to further validate the AI revolution build out said Dan Ives, managing director at Wedbush Securities, in a note on Sunday. And why? Why are we even listening to this guy? Has anybody seen how much value Dan Ives destroyed over at Octo Holdings, 8Co or whatever it was? The company that became a WorldCoin treasury company last year? Anybody remember that story? Yeah, that was Dan Ives and Tom Lee. Oh, but he wears funny shirts and he's a permable. So yes, naturally CNBC will have him on the air. Meanwhile, they're completely attacking, who was that guy? Stantham or whatever his name was that Joe Kernan went after the other day. They're targeting one of the perma bears. I don't know why anybody listens to this guy at this point. But, oh yeah, he says they're looking to further validate the AI revolution. Further, as if to suggest we have already been partially validated, which I am unaware of any data anywhere even remotely validating the AI revolution, if you can even call it that. I call it the AI mania or the AI bubble. In the meantime, jitters will continue as worries around the cost of this once-in-a-generation tech build-out hit its next gear of growth. Again, this guy, he is such a well-polished permable. Oh, once in a generation. It's evoking FOMO. Big tech build-out. It's going to hit its next gear of growth. Quick, hurry up and buy before you miss out on the next gear. That's what Dan Ives is saying. Some Mag 7 names have fared far worse than others. Microsoft is down 20% in June. NVIDIA has fallen 13%. Both Apple and Amazon are down 8%. And part of the sell-off could also be due to a lack of momentum narrative around the Mag 7. And I was just talking about Tom Lee. There he is. There's Tom Lee, who looks like he's been sticking his finger in wall sockets again. The market is trying to understand sort of the new narrative around the Mag 7 because they went from asset-light companies that produced a lot of free cash flow now to ones that are more balance sheet intensive, Tom Lee, head of research at Fundstrat, told CNBC's Morning Call last week. And that is a big statement there. And it's not a bullish thing, although Tom Lee, when he finally does take his finger out of the wall socket and talks to CNBC, he has to put his bullish spin on everything. Transitioning from an asset-light company that produces a lot of free cash flow to balance sheet intensive, which means a cash-burning company, that is not a good transition. And he's saying this like it's the bear case. These companies used to print money. They had to spend almost nothing, and the free cash flow just came flooding in. They would buy back their stock. Now their free cash flow is about to go negative. All that money they used to make, they have burned it all on something that gives no return on investment whatsoever. And Tom Lee's talking about it like it's a good thing. I do think investors are going to start to view that balance sheet as a workforce. What? The reason they're spending so much money is to replace essentially human endeavors with AI. That balance sheet is going to be deployed and generate returns eventually. Trust me, bro, Tom Lee says. So I think over time, investors are going to start to view that as a moat. We are in a transition period of that narrative. All right. So let's test Tom Lee's theory. The reason they're spending so much money is to essentially replace human endeavors with AI. Let's see how that's going over at Ford. Ford's AI hiccups lead carmaker to rehire graybeard engineers. Oh, yeah. There's Tom Lee's human replacement strategy playing out. It's almost as good as his bet on Ethereum. Ford Motor took an unusually human approach to fixing its stubborn quality problems. It bought back what it calls graybeard engineers to help train younger staff and to reprogram the artificial intelligence tools that were not getting the job done. Let's read that again, shall we? We rehired hundreds of people to bring them back because AI was not getting the job done. Over the last 3 years, Ford says it has hired 350 veteran engineers, many of them former employees and others from suppliers, to help address seemingly intractable quality woes that have cost the automaker billions. The result? Ford is now the top mainstream brand in the latest J.D. Power Initial Quality Survey released on Thursday. Artificial intelligence is a fantastic tool, but it's only as good as the information you use to train it, said Charles Poon, Ford's vice president of vehicle hardware engineering. He told reporters on a call on Wednesday. Well, maybe Ford running their quality control with a large language model that was trained on Reddit posts, in hindsight, considering it's only as good as the information you use to train it. Yeah, who could have seen this coming? Over prior years, we didn't pay as much attention as we should have to the experience of our most knowledgeable engineers that have been with us through many product cycles. Oh, you didn't pay as much attention, or did you just fire them and lay them off because some idiot in the boardroom said we can replace them with a chatbot? You probably had to rehire them at a much higher salary. Those engineers were at the heart of Ford's efforts to turn around quality problems, said Kumar Galhotra, chief operating officer. They now run mandatory meetings that rigorously troubleshoot quality problems, and they have reprogrammed AI tools to head off glitches before they happen. We've been relying more and more on automated quality systems and not getting the desired results. Let's read that again, shall we? They have been relying more and more on automated quality systems and not getting the desired results. So in other words, AI has not delivered any increased productivity. Quite the opposite. It's cost them billions. We brought back technical specialists, and they hunt for failure points before a part ever reaches the plant floor, and their work is flowing directly to Ford's bottom line. We're seeing our warranty coverages come down. We're seeing our recall costs come down, CEO Jim Farley said Thursday. These are all contributing to literally hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of a tailwind for Ford on cost. All right, so they bought in the AI tool, laid off a bunch of people. That cost them billions of dollars in mistakes because AI makes mistakes 20% of the time. Then they rehired those people, and they're getting hundreds of millions of dollars back. Yep, it's a new era of human productivity has been unlocked by artificial intelligence, right? That's what Tom Lee and Dan Ives would tell us. All right, shifting gears this morning, we have got the yen falls to a 40-year low versus the dollar, and traders are alert for potential FX intervention. Things in Japan, that currency is getting awfully weak, and we are now well past the point where historically they have intervened in markets by dumping U.S. government debt in order to sell those dollars and prop up their currency. The yen fell to a 40-year low against the dollar in Asia on Tuesday, putting traders on high alert for potential currency intervention by the government. Japanese Finance Minister Satsuki Katayama on Tuesday renewed her pledge to stop excessive yen volatility. We'll take appropriate action on currencies at any time as needed, Katayama said at a news conference. During the recent online meeting between the Japanese and U.S. finance chiefs, we confirmed that taking decisive steps is included as an option, she added, suggesting that the Japanese government could step in to prop up the yen. The yen recently weakened 0.2% to 162.2 per dollar after earlier touching 162.4, its lowest intraday level against the greenback since 1986. A key level has broken, and JPY remains a lower yielder, so more weakness is likely in the near term. What they're talking about here is that the yield on Japanese government debt is so low that you can borrow in Japan very cheaply, convert to dollars, and then buy debt here in the States that pays a higher yield. That is the yen carry trade and arbitrage opportunity. So as long as that big gap in interest rates remains, the yen is going to keep weakening. The last month has seen broad dollar strength, so this is not yet a yen. So this is not a yen problem. Okay, so that's interesting. He's saying it's not so much a specific yen problem, although it's the specifics of the yen make it worse, but this is a strong dollar environment here. Market forces such as the dollar strength are pressuring the yen and appear to have led Japanese authorities to move the line in the sand that would prompt them to defend the currency to around 163 against the dollar. Now, historically, they have acted at 160 to the dollar. You can see that right here, that big red candle that we had back in April. That was when the yen broke 160 to the dollar and the finance ministry intervened. They dumped it was something like $70 billion on the open market in order to prop up their currency. It had a very limited effect. You can see the yen just continued to weaken. Now we're past that level, 162.4. And this article in the journal is suggesting 163 is now the new red line in the sand for the Japanese finance ministry. So a moving goalpost. Why would that be? Because of the recent strength in the dollar. What has driven the recent strength in the dollar besides the oil trade earlier this year? What has changed in the last few weeks? Kevin Warsh at the Federal Reserve, in my opinion, is what changed. Japanese kind of getting ready for a hawkish Kevin Warsh, I kind of interpret this one as. Meanwhile, UK Starmer unveils £15 billion defense boost and long-delayed investment plan. Prime Minister Keir Starmer unveiled his long-delayed defense investment plan on Tuesday, promising an increase of £15 billion in funding to better equip Britain to fight the wars of the future in a blueprint he described as his legacy. Okay, and good luck with that one. In what is most likely his last major policy announcement, Starmer said the plan had been sharpened and went further than a previous document that prompted his ally John Healey to resign as defense minister earlier this month, accusing him of failing to secure enough money to keep the country safe. Starmer will take his plan, which foresees spending of nearly 80 billion pounds a year by 2029, to Ankara for a NATO meeting on July 7th and 8th, where he will want to signal that Britain was on a path to meet its commitment to reach defense spending of 3.5% of GDP by 2035. Europe is seriously ramping up their defense spending. The EU is out with a budget proposal recently. Germany is pushing back on it. That includes big increases in defense spending. The UK is doing the same thing. Now, interestingly enough, the UK bond market not really reacting to that this morning. We're looking at UK bond yields now. You got the 10-year gilt is up about 3.5 basis points at 4.757. So, I mean, the yields are a little bit higher, but considering, you know, tens of billions of pounds being spent additionally on defense and plans to further increase that in a country that has had big problems with its bond market because of budget deficits, you'd think the UK bond market would be reacting a little more strongly to this one. But Starmer, who is on his way out now, we've got Andy Burnham is coming in. He's going to be in charge soon. So maybe the market doesn't care because this is a guy trying to write his legacy on his last day at work, pretty much. All right. Meanwhile, on the energy front, China seen lifting some fuel export curbs on ample supplies. So the market is trying to get back to normal, even if whatever is going on in this trade is still going on. China has lifted some restrictions on oil product exports in the past week, rolling back measures introduced to safeguard domestic supplies shortly after the war began in the Middle East. According to people familiar with the matter, Beijing has informed certain state refiners that they're now allowed to export fuels such as gasoline and diesel to a wider range of countries than the handful of oil-starved neighbors already exempted. The new policy will affect shipments loaded from July onward, said the people who were briefed by authorities on the matter, but asked not to be named because they're not authorized to speak to the media. Neither Chinese Ministry of Commerce nor the nation's top refiner replied to a request for comment. The lifting of restrictions by Beijing may bring more volumes to Asia, where several nations have faced fuel shortages, soaring costs, queues at the pumps, and flight cancellations. Other regional suppliers, such as South Korea, are also starting to ramp up exports in what appears to be an attempt to front-run the market before flows from the Middle East return to normal. So is the market getting ahead of itself here? Because people are starting to act like things are all copacetic in the Middle East, and they are clearly not, even though oil is only sitting at $71 a barrel. And then you've got India plans to add strategic fuel reserves after Iran war shock. So this is going to be a lot of buying pressure, even as that new supply comes to market out of the Middle East. Let's assume things go back to normal there. The Chinese are going to ramp up their imports back to where they were. And apparently countries like India and Japan are going to be stockpiling oil. So there is going to be a lot of pent-up buying pressure that's going to keep prices from falling further. India plans to build strategic reserves of crude, liquefying petroleum gas, and liquefied natural gas large enough to meet as much as a month of domestic demand as the country seeks to avoid a repeat of supply shocks created by the war in the Persian Gulf. The oil ministry has set up a committee to study details, including potential locations, operating models, and the split between overground and underground storage, according to people familiar with the matter, who asked not to be named as the discussions are not public. The world's most populous nation has been one of the most impacted by the aftermath of U.S. and Israeli strikes on Iran, including the near total closure of the Strait of Hormuz. The crisis exposed a heavy dependence on energy imports from the Middle East, but also laid bare the limits of stockpiles that should have acted as a buffer. Meanwhile, over in Russia, the fuel shortages appear to be getting worse because the Kremlin confirms it's in talks to import gasoline. One of the world's biggest energy producers needs to import gasoline. That is how effective these drone strikes have been. The Kremlin confirmed Tuesday that the Russian government is in negotiations with other countries to purchase gasoline as it tries to stabilize its domestic market following a series of Ukrainian drone attacks on oil refineries and energy infrastructure that have led to fuel rationing. Discussions are actively being held, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters during a daily press briefing. Peskov declined to name the specific countries involved in the talks. Last week, Reuters cited industry sources as saying that Russia was discussing importing 50,000 metric tons of AI-92-grade gasoline from Kazakhstan. At the time, Kazakhstan's energy ministry said that Moscow had not formally approached Astana for those supplies. Russia, the world's second largest exporter of crude oil and third largest exporter of refined petroleum products, has seen its gasoline production drop by 25% after Ukrainian drone attacks reportedly forced the shutdown of several large refineries. In response to the supply drop, authorities have introduced fuel rationing measures across the country and in annexed Crimea. The disruptions arrive at a critical time with both the summer vacation travel season and the agricultural farming season in full swing. Russia's still having issues with fuel, even as the rest of the world is trying to get back to normal. And check this one out. This is interesting. In Reuters, this story just broke this morning. U.S. is working on ban targeting Chinese energy inverters, sources say. By the way, inverters is basically the electronic device that takes power from solar panels, windmills, steps up that voltage in order to put it onto the grid. The Trump administration is drafting a ban on imports of foreign inverters, which connects solar projects and batteries to the grid, over concerns that China could use them to disrupt power supplies, according to five people with knowledge of the matter. The rule being drafted by the U.S. Federal Communications Commission would apply to new foreign models of inverters and could be published as early as this year, according to the sources who asked not to be named because the matter was not public. The Trump administration was spurred to revive the effort in part by a decision by the European Commission in May to ban Chinese-made inverters from publicly funded energy projects, the five sources said, though they cautioned the U.S. proposal could still be modified or shelved altogether. Last year, Reuters reported that rogue communication devices not listed in product documents had been found in some Chinese solar power inverters by U.S. experts who stripped down equipment hooked up to grids to check for security issues. So the Chinese were backdooring vital infrastructure on our grid, which is increasingly reliant on solar and wind energy. Maybe not as much as some would like, but it's certainly higher than it used to be. And now they're banning the import of these devices because the Chinese, who have a long history of putting backdoors in electrical hardware, maybe it's not such a good idea to give the Chinese a window into what's going on inside our power grid. And last but not least, private credit is making bets on consumer debt at a precarious time. This one from June 28th, billions are flowing from firms like Blue Owl and KKR into buy now, pay later companies. It's an untested model, and skeptics are worried about what happens in a downturn. We all know what happens in a downturn. We've seen this before. They just called it something different last time. The private credit industry was dubbed shadow banking as it took business away from traditional lenders. Buy now, pay later companies have been referred to as hawking phantom debt that falls outside Wall Street's typical tracking methods. Now these two more opaque corners of finance are overlapping in a big way and catching the attention of credit raters, former regulatory chiefs, and others on guard for potential risks as U.S. consumers show mounting signs of strain. Officially known as forward flow agreements, investing heavyweights like Blue Owl, KKR, and Elliott Investment Management are increasingly agreeing to pre-purchase billions of dollars worth of loans before they're even made, in a bet that consumer assets will outpace returns elsewhere. That's been a boon to the likes of Klarna, Affirm, and PayPal, offering fuel for the origination machines at the heart of a business more Americans are embracing. Skeptics, self-included, are anxious that the model incentivizes churning out more loans to consumers, with some drawing parallels to the lead-up to the subprime mortgage crisis, where originate-to-sell practices detached risk from reward. But participants counter that originators can retain chunks of the loans they sell, a structure that reassures private credit buyers who see these short-term consumer assets as a way to diversify their billions of dollars of longer-term financing agreements. All right, so what are they talking about here? Drawing parallels to the lead-up of the subprime mortgage crisis where originate-to-sell practices detached risk from reward. You guys remember that scene in The Big Short when they go to the bar with these two a-holes from the mortgage company? And talking to the basically, remember, they're not confessing, they're bragging, that scene when they're talking about, you know, ninjas and, oh, yeah, he likes to give loans to strippers because they're cash rich. The Joker, yeah, I think I heard Warren Buffett say something like that. Those guys were originate to sell. Their whole point was to just get as many mortgages written as possible. And they didn't care who they were lending to because by the next day, the bank would have sold that loan off. So they were not assuming any of the risk for themselves. And this is exactly what's going on with Klarna and Affirm through these forward flow agreements. These loans have been sold before they're ever even issued. So what is the incentive for Klarna and Affirm to make sure these loans are being sent to reliable borrowers? And there is no incentive because they're not being sent to reliable borrowers. The average credit score of a buy now, pay later user is subprime. This is by design a subprime product with no recourse that has very limited reporting requirements, if any, to the credit bureaus. And a lot of these people are missing their payments, and yet the companies issuing the loans are lying about their delinquencies. Yeah, what's the worst thing that could happen? And remember, guys, this whole machine is all about securitizing that debt and finding a way to dump it into the retirement accounts of unsuspecting investors, pension plans, 401ks, and IRAs. This crap is out there. The bailout is happening as we speak. They're dumping this stuff into people's retirements. Know what you own, guys. Know what you own. And I just want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Millen Heads this morning. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button for the algorithm. Thank you very much to my magnanimous Millen Heads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links are down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys, everybody. Till next time, live small and dream big.